You live for planning the perfect trip. The thrill of comparing hotels, scoring that impossible reservation, and piecing together an unforgettable itinerary. You already think like a travel advisor, so why not just be one? Fora is a modern travel agency built for people who love to plan vacations and help others travel well. As a Fora advisor, you'll be set up for success with best-in-class training, powerful booking tools, and a vibrant global community of experts sharing real insider tips. Fora helps you turn your love of planning vacations into a business with a flexible, meaningful stream of income, with commission on every hotel, cruise, and activity you book. And with access to more than 7,000 preferred partners, you'll unlock VIP perks like upgrades, resort credits, and late checkout, giving you and your clients the kind of elevated travel experiences regular travelers simply don't get. Getting started is as easy as booking trips for people you already know. Become a Fora advisor today at foratravel.com/earn. That's foratravel.com/earn.
Hi, everybody. My name is Tom Wilkins. Welcome to TomCast. This is our first podcast of the year, and we have my dear friend, Dr. Jack Sternberg, sitting over here at the table. Jack, it's great to have you here.
Hey, it's wonderful to be here.
And you look good. I mean, look at that. We're all dressed up. I can't remember last time I wore this.
I try not to do this or any ties.
Yeah, me both. Well, I have Jack in here today because Jack was the first oncologist, if you will. That's a big word. I don't know where that came from. I don't know if I want to know, but oncologist in the state of Arkansas. Is that correct?
Yes, in 1977. I had finished my training at MD Anderson Cancer Institute, and I moved up here to Little Rock, Arkansas. At that time, there were no other fully trained medical oncologists in the entire state. There were a few hematologists who would practice cancer medicine, but they hadn't actually been trained specifically as an oncologist.
Jack, what is you said hematologist?
No. A medical oncologist.
Medical oncologist, okay.
Yeah, I basically was trained to take care of and give chemotherapy and other therapies to all types of cancer.
Wow, and you did that, really? I know you flew around the state and did all kinds of educational things?
Yeah, well, you know, because the field was so new, it was 1977 before the first boards were even taken. So it was a brand new field. People didn't really even know what medical oncology was. If someone in Arkansas at that time got cancer, they basically had to go down to MD Anderson in Houston. So when I came up here and I was recruited by two other doctors, radiotherapists at the CARTI. CARTI is the Central Arkansas Radiation Therapy Institute. They had trained at MD Anderson. They found me down there. They recruited me to come up here to Arkansas. And the three of us, along with a surgical oncologist at the Med Center, who had also trained at MD Anderson, we would actually, after a day's work, get on a Piper Cub and fly to Fort Smith, Mountain Home, Texarkana, and we would do tumor boards where we tried to show the doctors what modern oncology looked like, what now they could expect and want to refer to.
Wow. Well, what a program that was, I'm sure.
It was amazing. It was amazing. I look back in those days and I wonder where I had the energy. But at the same time, I was 30 years old, so I had plenty of energy.
Wow. You still look, well, maybe 32. At any rate, Jack, I am, forgive me, we're friends, folks, so I'm going to be trying to call him Dr. Jack because he deserves that honor, but we're friends, so I just call him Jack. Anyway, Dr. Sternberg, what happened back in the day? You have such an interesting story in many ways, but you met your wife that actually was working for your clinic there, correct, back in the day?
No, actually, I was taking my internship at Mount Sinai Hospital in Cleveland, Ohio. And one day when I was making rounds with a group of other physicians, I walked past a reception desk and there was this incredibly gorgeous woman, and Cupid shot me with an arrow. About a month later, we went out on a Friday night. I met her family on Saturday. And then on Monday night, we went out to see a live show. And before the show, I said to her, well, when we get married. And to this day, we always laugh. I never asked her to marry me. I just said, when we get married. And we were married 5 months later.
And this beautiful person's name is Marilyn.
Marilyn. And we've been married 52 years.
52 years. Goodness gracious. I've known this couple for a long, long time, and they not only love each other, but they're, you know, you can love somebody, but you work well together.
Mm-hmm.
You've always been a
We're
couple.
A team.
I'm sorry?
We're a team.
Well, a team. That's what I'm saying. And so that's great. Okay, so you marry this young lady, and then you guys move from, where do you say, Cincinnati?
Cleveland.
Cleveland, okay. So I was almost right.
Yeah, so you were in the right state.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we moved from Cleveland, Ohio. We moved to Houston, Texas, MD Anderson. I did my fellowship, and 1 year of, I was on the staff. I was doing research. I published a paper within my first year. I was thinking that I was going to have an academic career in cancer medicine, but I quickly realized that I really was not that kind of a doctor. My goal really was to take care of patients, and writing papers and giving lectures and all that. As exciting as that really was not what turned me on to medicine. Taking care and helping people is what turned me on. And when the opportunity came here to basically start an entire medical field in the state of Arkansas and be the number one, it was just too exciting to turn down.
You know, Jack, I've always known you to be a trailblazer, if you will. You really haven't had any, even though the obstacles were out there, you just did your thing, went straight ahead. And 99.9% of the time, you were right. And the people that didn't know what the heck they were talking about were going, who is the Sternberg guy, right?
Well, when I was wrong, I just didn't let you know it.
Yeah. Well, what amazing, you know, there's so much. I've seen you give several talks, and there's so much information, so many tributaries you can go down. But I want to know what you said that there wasn't really a practicing oncologist in Arkansas, right, when you came here, correct?
Yeah, there were a few hematologists that, because they had been trained how to treat leukemia and lymphoma, they were the only ones that knew how to use chemotherapy at all. But they had never been trained in lung cancer, stomach cancer, prostate cancer, all the other cancers. But by default, people would ask them to help out.
Okay.
So they were trying the best they could. But, you know, as I say, the only thing I say is that I was the first fully trained. They were doing a fine job. I just thought that my training was superior.
Now, did you get most of your trainings? I think you said earlier, my dad always said, Tom, you got to listen. Was it MD Anderson that was your training ground down there?
Yes.
All right. And how long did it take you? I've always wondered, how long does it take to be a doctor?
Well, you go through 4 years of medical school. And then back in 1972, you did an internship followed by 2 years of residency. Nowadays, you do 3 years of residency. They don't do internships anymore. And then after you finish your 3 years, then you choose a subspecialty. I chose medical oncology. I went to MD Anderson, and I did a two-year fellowship.
Wow. How were you treated by the other doctors during that era?
Well, it was a mixed bag. Most of the physicians were phenomenally excited. I mean, just joyful, because they really had nobody to send their patients to. And I remember I wasn't supposed to open my practice until 7/7/77, July 7th. And I was getting phone calls on June 28th at my home, and I was being threatened that if I didn't see their patients right away, they'd never send me a patient. That's how desperate things were. So I started seeing patients, and I didn't even have my office running. I didn't have the receptionist. I didn't have the nurses in place yet. In other words, it was moving way too fast, but we survived.
When you opened your first clinic over in Little Rock, and you shared with me earlier a few weeks ago that they were giving you space and all kinds of furnishings and everything.
Yeah, I had quit MD Anderson over I'm going to call it a moral dispute. It was something that I didn't like that they were doing. And I finally just said, that's it. I can't continue here. And I gave them 90 days notice. And it was during that time, I was actually supposed to be going to Columbia, South Carolina. The group that I was going to join wouldn't give me a written contract because of it, even though I was 29 years old. I said to them, I may be 29, but I'm not stupid. If you don't give me a written contract, I have no guarantee you're going to give me what you promised me.
Wow.
And so I said, I'm not coming. And then all of a sudden, I had no place to go and no job. And it wasn't more than 2 or 3 hours later that I was in downtown Houston at a medical conference asking one of the professors that I knew if she knew of any job in private practice. And as she was telling me of a job in Dallas, a doctor from Cartier in Little Rock, Arkansas, walked up to her. He knew her. He said, she introduced me to him and him to me. And he said, I was told to try to recruit you to come to Little Rock, but you're going to Columbia, South Carolina. And I said, well, not as of 3 hours ago. And so I literally was flown up to Little Rock 4 days later on a Friday. I was taken around the entire medical community. Cartier was this central radiation therapy institute that was incredible. It was so modern. It was unbelievable. Wonderful hospitals in Little Rock. And I brought my wife back the next week. She fell in love with Little Rock. And that weekend, we bought a house that was still in 2x4s. And they promised it would be ready in 90 days. I went to the doctor's building to have an office, and I just assumed I'd walk in and there'd be an office there for me. And the fellow just showed me, he said, how many feet do you need? And I went, I don't know. He said, well, probably about 2,500 square feet. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, so what do you want it to look like? I go, well, what do you mean? He said, well, how big a waiting room? How many exam rooms? How big a reception area? How big of this, how big of that? And I go, what do I know? and I literally, and again, I look back at this and I don't know how I did it. I sat down with a ruler and I drew out plans for my entire office down to the exact size of exam rooms, where the sink would go, where everything would be. And then I'll never forget the funny story. He said, how big a waiting room do you need? And I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, how many Withams will you have? And I said, Withams? And he said, well, yeah, when people come to see you and they bring friends and family with them, they're called Withams, people with them. And I said, well, with what I do, they'll usually bring maybe one or two people with them. So I need a waiting room probably that can hold 50 people. And they made this huge expanse. And I always felt that my office had to be warm instead of sterile. So we put in beautiful furniture and beautiful seating and carpeting and pictures. And it was like being in your living room. And I was very proud of that. Wow. And it was amazing. The office was perfect. The home we moved into 90 days later, it was perfect. Everything was just the way it was supposed to be.
Well, Withams, We're going to take a with them right now. We're going to take a short break for a commercial. Back here with our good friend, Dr. Jack Sternberg. We'll be back in just a minute. And here's a word from our sponsor.
Hello, everyone. I'm Susan Wilkins, and I'm thrilled to share an exciting new opportunity with you. Every life story deserves a keepsake. With professional video storytelling, we can help you capture your journey from the beginning until today. At Sweet Pea Productions, we provide a unique platform for you to create your very own legacy video featuring some of your favorite old photographs and even music from your time up until today. Imagine the gift of sharing your life story in a beautiful personalized video that will be cherished by your loved ones for generations to come. For more information, please contact Tom Wilkins at 501-622-9570.
And then back here, this is Tom Wilkins with TomCast. I have my dear friend, Dr. Jack Sternberg over here. And Jack, one thing that I'm curious about, we briefly in the first segment there about how did people, doctors, if you will, treat you when you first came?
Well, you know, back in 1977, we went into private practices, and the thing that I thought I had to do to meet doctors and get business was to personally go to their offices and introduce myself. Mm. And so I literally went to every surgeon's office that I could find in Little Rock, because usually it was a surgeon who referred a cancer patient to you. There were plenty of other internal medicine and family doctors, but I couldn't visit with all of them.
Sure.
But I would go to the surgeon's offices, and most of them were very gracious. Some of the things that we were doing back then were foreign to them. For instance, they were all used to doing classic radical mastectomies, and we were pushing for lumpectomies and preventative chemotherapy. And this was so radical that it actually took a while for them to get comfortable with that, but they did. But I always tell the story that I went to one surgeon, an older gentleman, a very southern type gentleman, and I introduced myself. And I came in the office, he was sitting at his desk, and he said to me, "Sit down, son." And I mean, I'm 29 years old, so yeah. I mean, I'm intimidated. So I sat down, and he kind of stood up and he said, "Son, I just want you to know, I've been given this chemotherapy, this 5-FU, since 1955. And I think all of you medical oncologists are just a bunch of charlatans." And I mean, I just melted.
Charlatans.
But that was the only negative experience I had. But I just remember being called a charlatan.
Hopefully you never said that to another doctor coming up, did you?
No.
No, of course not. Well, just so many different tributaries in this gentleman's life. It's hard to pick some. You're Jewish.
Yes.
Somebody told me you were Jewish.
My life.
I think it was Marilyn, and she's Jewish.
All her life.
Tell me about your faith a little bit here.
Well, you know, that's an hour story, but the reality was that we were Jewish by being raised Jewish. We weren't really Jewish in the sense of practicing the religion. We were kind of what was called Reform, which was kind of secular, but the pride of being Jewish was enormous. During the first 3 years of my practice, I was incredibly successful. Overnight, I would wealthy, but I suddenly had money where I didn't have any, and I'm living in a beautiful house. We put in a swimming pool. We had two brand new cars. I was considered to be someone of importance, and despite all of that, Marilyn and I would kind of look at each other and then say, now that we've achieved all this, is this all there is?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't know how to go any further than that. The other thing was is that I went almost an entire year without a partner. I was on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every weekend for 9 months once. I was just emotionally, today we would say I was pretty close to being burned out. I was dealing with all the suffering, the dying of cancer patients. There were plenty of wonderful stories, plenty of successes, but there was also a lot of death and dying and suffering. And it started to really emotionally begin to get to me. I became very short-tempered because I had nothing left. When people kept asking me questions, because that was my job, it was like being beat up every time they would ask me a question. And then one of my Jewish doctor friends started going to a church. And when I heard that, I was very upset with him. I mean, here I am, not really practicing Judaism, but, you know, going to a church as a Jew, you're a traitor. I mean, these are the people that have persecuted us for 2,000 years, and now you're one of them? And he just said to me on the telephone, I'll never forget it, he just said, I go to this wonderful Bible church, and for the first time in my life, from all they've taught me, from both the Old and New Testament, I've never been so proud to be Jewish. And I went, what?
Oh.
And he swears I said to him, and I don't remember this, well, we've been searching too. And the next thing that came out of my mouth was, it was a Saturday night, can we come with you to church tomorrow? And my wife and I, reluctantly, fearfully, expected to go into a church and see the cross and see stained glass windows and pews and all these things. And it was a Bible church that had just started up. It was in a gymnasium. And so instead of the cross, there was a basketball net. Instead of seats, there was bleachers. I mean, there was nothing intimidating. And the sermon that day asked the question from Psalm 73, why do bad things happen to good people? Which is what I kept asking God, how do you let all these people have cancer and suffer and die? And the answer that I received that day, I won't go into it, but it gave me for the first time in my life some comfort. And my wife also heard a story that was meaningful to her. And we walked out of the church. I mean, it was like a road to Damascus experience. And my wife looked at me and she said, I want to receive this Jesus. And I said, we really can't. We don't know enough. I said, you know, I believe in God now. I just hope it's not this Jesus. And you say, well, why would you say that? Well, because I also knew that by accepting Jesus as a Jewish person, most of my Jewish family and friends would disown me. And that happened some. In other words, there wasn't great rejoicing when Mel and I came to know Jesus as our Lord, Savior, and Messiah. There was problems. Not as much as we anticipated, but I did have some relatives completely disown me.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't like him very much anyway, so it was I mean, that was the difference. I think the average Gentile who comes to know Christ, people are excited. They're thrilled. That was not going to be what happened to us. And so, to me, it took a lot more thought, convincing, studying, to finally say, yes, you are my Lord, you are my Savior, you are my Jewish Messiah. And that happened over a period of 5 weeks. We went into intensive Bible study. My wife actually came to Christ 5 days before me. And we say that was so that nobody could say that she just followed me. And I came home and she said, Jack, today I've accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior. And I looked at her and I said, oh, now we're in a mixed marriage. I mean, you're a believer and I'm not. But 5 days later, man, I came to
that's got a hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
5 days later. That is incredible.
And that was 45 years ago.
When did you retire?
I retired in 2006 at the age of 60.
But I happen to know that you still stay involved in the field.
You know, since 2006, which is almost 20 years, there has been a phenomenal explosion of new medications for cancer care and understanding of cancer. It has become so complicated. It has occurred so fast that without actually practicing it every day, there's no way that I can keep up. I'm in essence obsolete. I could not go back and practice today. That doesn't mean I don't not know a lot about cancer. I go to cancer conferences and I can still say a lot of things of meaning, but I could not treat people anymore. As a matter of fact, the explosion of knowledge is so great that I believe it's going to take artificial intelligence to help oncologists keep up, to know what to do.
Wow. And AI is taking over everything.
Well, again, when there's this much change this quickly, you have to have some way to be able to get that knowledge in an easy way.
I'm going to make a general statement here, but knowing you, it is more than just practicing medicine or has been. It's the way that you treat your patients on a human level. I have known you to be kind. I've known you to be direct. And somewhere in between all that is the general personality of caring for that person, where some people, I'm not saying all doctors by any stretch, but when you get 30, 40 people a day coming to see you, possibly, I know some people do, it's hard to get that human element there.
I probably went into oncology because I liked the human contact. I have many other reasons. My mother had breast cancer. She had a fine doctor that treated her. But one of the things that I say that after I came to Christ, I just didn't care for patients. I started really caring for patients. Mm-hmm. I changed. I think I became a nicer person, a more loving person. I wouldn't go into an exam room without shaking hands or hugging the patient. I didn't leave the exam room without, again, shaking hands or hugging the patient. I got to know them and their families. They got to know my story. It wasn't just, I'm going to treat your cancer and now we're done. It became totally different. When I would lose a patient, I knew enough about the husband and the family that I wrote each patient's family a personal sympathy card, showing that it was not a pre-printed card, that I knew them well and I felt their pain.
Well, I've always said when I tell people I'm going to be either interviewing you or being with you, whatever, and people always say, Jack's the smartest guy in the room. He is. There's so many topics that you study up on, you've learned over the years, and such an honor to hear about your journey. And we're going to get back to that journey in just a second. We're going to take just a quick little break here so we can all get a little water and talk more to Dr. Jack Sternberg here on TomCast. Welcome back, everybody. It's Tom Wilkins here for TomCast here under our first podcast that we've done for the year. I have Dr. Jack Sternberg with me. Jack, I got a question for you, something you will not know. What was your first bicycle?
My first bicycle, I just looked this up just yesterday because I'm writing a story for my daughter. It was called a Royal Rudge 3-speed. And I was able to go and Google it or duck dive it. And I have pictures of it it looks identical to the bicycle that I remember living with for a decade. And I couldn't believe that I remembered the name, but it's been so amazing. I've been asking Grok AI, G-R-O-K AI, specific questions about the schools I went to, where they're located, what kind of programs I was in. And it actually has the information. I had forgotten that when I went to junior high, I had gone through a program called 7SP, 9SP, Special Progress. There was a situation in New York schools where you could do 7th, 8th, and 9th grades in 2 years instead of three. You had to take IQ tests. You had to pass certain exams. And I had forgotten completely about that. So I asked Grok about that, and it gave me an entire thing that I read. And sure enough, it was identical to what I went through. And it even talked about the reasoning for it, so that students that could do better, if it took them 3 years, they'd be bored. So you had to push them to do it in two so they wouldn't be bored. I mean, it's amazing. I went to Google Maps because I said that I used to walk to school, and Google Maps, I went up the exact streets and walked it on their Earth View or whatever it's called. And it was just like I was walking again at the age of 10 or 12. Wow. Up the street. It was just amazing.
Well, Jack, you don't know this, but we actually were going to surprise you today with your bicycle that you just described. But I went to our staff over here. We didn't have the budget for it.
Okay.
And so we're going to work on that, though. Maybe we can get you a better picture of the one, or maybe we'll just overlay a picture during that segment there. What do you think?
I would be fine. But it was amazing to do this walk down memory lane.
Yeah.
Things I didn't remember.
Sure. Yeah, that's for all of us that are getting a little bit up in age, for sure. I wanted to discuss, we talked about AI just a little bit earlier, and you just mentioned here too. What do you think the future is of AI? Here we are in 2025. What's
at this point, the way I'm using AI is to supplement my knowledge. My fear is that it will replace having personal knowledge. What do I mean by that? I went through 4 years of medical school memorizing every disease, anatomy, biochemistry, all of these things. You know, what sits in this head is phenomenal, okay? Now, every once in a while, I go to AI and I ask it a question of something I already know, and I want it to give me more information. But if I was a medical student, with all the explosion of new information that they have to learn, probably four times what I had to learn, I'm afraid that they're going to say, well, why memorize this? I'll just ask AI. What is idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura? Why do I have to memorize?
I was asking that question just today. Yes.
I mean, what I'm just saying is that instead of memorizing all the details of a disease, just say, well, I'll know the name of the disease and I'll just go and ask AI more information about it, and I don't have to memorize it anymore. That's my fear of one aspect of AI,
okay.
of a negative.
Okay, what's the positive then?
Well, the positive is how easily you can get information that would take you days and hours to try to pull up, and you wouldn't probably do as good a job.
Right.
You know, I remember the days when I started in practice in Little Rock, that if I needed some information about cancer, I had to leave my office, drive over to the University of Arkansas Medical School, go to their library, go into the section with these books that were against these walls, and I would try to find the abstracts that maybe answered the question I needed to have answered. I mean, it would take me hour upon hour. And how often did I have the time to even do that? Well, today you can ask Google almost the same question and get an immediate answer. So that's the good part of all this is that information has become more readily available.
Here's a call from the VA right here.
But, you know, with every new innovation, there's always good and there's always bad. Okay? I mean, just the Industrial Revolution. It was wonderful for mass production. Things became cheaper. But then all of a sudden, people were out of work because a machine was doing the job. So, you know, there's always good and bad with every new innovation.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your experience with the Charitable Christian Clinic.
Yeah. After I retired, and I didn't do anything medically for over a year. I almost needed that year to just refresh myself. And then one day I was at the golf course. Never was much of a golfer, but I was.
No, I can verify that.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah, you played with me.
Yeah.
There was a tournament going on, and I saw the table, and I asked them, "What's this tournament?" And the woman said to me, "Oh, we're fundraising for the Charitable Christian Medical Clinic here in Hot Springs." And I said, "What's that?" And she said, "Well, it's a charitable clinic where we give medical care to indigent Americans, and we're located downtown." And then she told me about it, and I said, "Oh, well, that's interesting." I said, "You know, I'm a board certified internist and a board certified medical oncologist." And she said, "When can you start?" I went, "Well." I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "I'm not going to agree to anything, but I'll come down and look at it." And I went down there. There were a number of other volunteer physicians that were working. I saw what they were doing. It was very exciting. And then for well over a decade, I worked 1 or 2 days a week at the Charitable Clinic, half a day. I wasn't looking for full-time work, but it was nice to get back. I was working more as a family doctor internist, not as a cancer doctor. So I had to restudy general medicine.
So let me stop you there. You have a career in oncology, but you switched hats there. Now, does your degree, your title, whatever umbrella that's under, does that cover just general medical too?
Well, before you can do specialty training in medical oncology, you have to be a board certified internist.
Okay.
So I had general medical training. Now, that's different than being board certified in family practice. In other words, as an internist, I didn't give injections into knees. I didn't treat tendonitis. These were things that a family doctor does. As an internist, you're dealing with heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, and trying to make diagnoses of difficult medical problems. But you're not doing the simpler things, important things.
Right.
And you only got your training in a hospital. So there were no injecting knees in a hospital. That's in an office. So I never got trained in any of that. And so when I came out and started doing more and more family practice, in essence, I had to study like the old days. And I did. And then I heard about how far behind the veterans administration and hospitals and clinics were in seeing patients, that sometimes it took months to get in to see a doctor. I mean, it was just, I heard this was horrible, and this would have been about 10 years ago. And every time I drove down Mount Vernon Avenue, I would see the sign that said VA clinic. So being
You're curious?
I am.
Yeah.
I just drove over to the clinic and I walked up to the administrator and I said, hey, you know, the Chartwell Clinic is not having as many patients as before. And, you know, I'm a board certified internist. How about if I volunteered to work here and help you out one day a week, full time, one day a week? And she said, that would be wonderful. Let me get back to you. And she got back to me and she said, I'm sorry, we can't do it. I said, excuse me.
Yeah, hello?
I said, you're so far behind and I want to come in here
volunteering
and help
your time.
You
yeah.
one day a week for free. And you're telling me I can't. And she said to me, well, I checked with Little Rock and there's never been a designation to have a volunteer physician in a CBOC, a community-based outpatient clinic. And so we have no way we can designate you to let you do it. I said, so make a designation.
Yeah,
but
how hard is that?
You're dealing with the government, right?
Right.
And I kept pushing them. And eventually they decided they could put me in family medicine. Okay. And so I said, I don't care what you put me in.
Sure.
I just want to work.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You want to help people.
So then I showed up and I said, okay, now that I've said I'll work for you, what do you need me to do? And they said, well, you know, we have three doctors here. We have three nurse practitioners and we have, you know, full lab, full x-ray, full pharmacy. But all of our doctors and nurse practitioners are so booked up that when a patient needs to be seen that day or soon, we can't get him in.
Whoa.
Could you be our urgent care doctor? And I said, yeah. I mean, I don't want to do routine physicals. I want to be challenged.
Right.
So I became, in essence, the same kind of doctor you would go to at an urgent care clinic. Or I worked on Mondays. If somebody called up on Thursday or Friday and said, I'm having this problem or that problem, I need to see a doctor, but it wasn't an emergency, they would say, well, you can't see your own doctor, but we could have you come in and see Dr. Jack on Monday. And the person would say, I don't care. I just want to see a doctor.
Yeah, there you go.
And so I would, that was my other job I was called the same day doctor. And I did that for about 6 or 7 years. Unfortunately, recently, they had some problems with the building and I haven't been able to work for 7 months because they had no place to put me to work. But that was one of the best experiences I ever had. Besides the joy that I had in getting to know the veterans, they gave me a half an hour per patient. That was like forever.
Wow.
I mean, I got to know them. I got to ask a lot of questions. Even though every patient I saw was somebody else's patient, I would look through their entire charts for the last 20 years. And every once in a while, I would find a diagnosis that somebody had missed. The doctors and nurses that they were seeing were great, but it was more in my specialty. So, So I found things and I came home every day from doing the volunteer work at the VA with the same joy I used to have as medical oncologist.
And, you know, rumor on the street has it that people actually said, when's Dr. Jack going to be back in the office? They wanted to come back and see you. Is that correct?
Yeah. And one of the problems was that I would talk to these men about hunting and fishing and the Lord and other things. And when they would go to check out, they would go to the front desk and say, can I switch to Dr. Jack?
Yeah.
And of course the answer was no.
Yeah.
And of course part of the answer of why it was appropriate to be no was I wasn't doing all the things the other doctors were doing for these patients. They had to do yearly physicals and different things. And I didn't do any of that.
Right.
Okay. I was strictly the urgent care doctor taking care of a specific problem. And I didn't want to do that other stuff. And I liked exactly what they asked me to do.
Did they have other doctors that were similar kind of volunteer stuff, or were they mainly paid? Or
no. No, I mean, literally, I was, as far as I know, the only volunteer for free medical doctor in a clinic in all of America.
So there's nothing like you get what you pay for on this deal. You actually just, you were highly qualified, to say the least. You know, I'm currently the chairman of the Veterans Memorial, and I have guys every once in a while come up to me and say, hey, you know that Dr. Jack fella? I said, yeah, I know him pretty well. And he said, he's a heck of a guy. That's not one of their words, though. I calmed it down a little bit. But
well, you know, a lot of physicians are aloof, arrogant. They may be good at what they do, but it's business.
Okay? Right.
And to me, it never was. I mean, very early in my career, I took off the lab coat. I took off the tie. I went from Dr. Sternberg to being Dr. Jack. I gave people my testimony book of coming to the Lord. In other words, I became a friend.
Right.
I mean, and because that's how I enjoyed it. I wouldn't have enjoyed it just making diagnoses. I needed to get to know and be part of these people's lives.
Yeah, well, that's you, and that's a quite a testimony there. I'm going to put this on the screen, but you got a book here. What is this all about?
I've ended up surprisingly writing a number of different things. I wrote a 14-hour course called Christianity is Jewish Roots. I don't even know where it all came from. I wrote my testimony pamphlet that I handed out to over 3,000 patients. And then my wife actually wrote a book of her story called From Tradition to Truth. And I read it and I got really excited, but I wasn't going to write the same book. I thought, what else could I write about that I think makes a difference? And it suddenly struck me that within the New Testament, it says very clearly that when you come to know Christ and the Holy Spirit enters you, you become a new creature in Christ. Okay? And suddenly it struck me, did I become a new creature when I became a Christian back in 1980? And was there any evidence of it that I could prove to myself or others? And so I sat down and I thought of different aspects of the 30 or 35 years before I wrote this, and I came up with a number of different aspects of my life that were dramatically different and would not have changed had I not been indwelt by the Spirit. And one of the biggest ones was getting rid of my anger. I was never physical, but I got angry, verbally angry, very easily. Hmm. And the harder I worked and the more I got burnt out, the faster I was to yell at somebody and curse and do other things. So I went back and I wrote a book, realizing how much I had changed, and that I was really a new creature.
Wow. Amazing. I'm going to take a last break here for just a second. We've covered a lot of ground, to say the least. I want to talk about things that maybe I don't ask you the question, but you want to talk about that maybe is in your heart and that you just want to share with people about. You're such a good storyteller. You've had so many experiences. Unfortunately, the ones you've had with me haven't been real good because I keep yelling at you when you're swinging a golf club. But but basically, we're going to come back and just we're going to discuss, but it'll be very interesting. I invite you all to learn more about this booklet. Where could you get this? Can you still get it or not?
It is not available like okay. that anymore.
All right.
But my personal email address is drjack100, drjack100@aol.com. And anybody who writes me and says they would like me to send them a copy of the book as a PDF, I will be more than happy to.
Great.
I've never made a penny off of anything I've written.
I believe that.
This is all things I give back.
Sure. And God will honor you for that too. We're going to be back in just a second, folks. Back to TomCast here with Dr. Jack Sternberg. Hey, it's Tom Wilkins back with TomCast again. This is our podcast of the year. This is so excited sitting here and going down journey lane, memory lane, if you will, with my good friend, Dr. Jack Sternberg. Jack, let's talk about some health journeys that we both have been on.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
You know, Tom, when I agreed to do this podcast, I obviously didn't know where we were going to go.
Right.
And I didn't plan on making it a lot about my spiritual journey, but I'm happy, of course, to always do
sure.
that. And you've just asked me about our health issues. You've had some health issues that thankfully you've recovered from beautifully. And of course, you know that actually 5 years ago yesterday, I had my right kidney removed for cancer. It was accidentally discovered. I never had a symptom. I had no, looking back, there was no way I could have diagnosed it earlier. I just, there was no clue. And then about 20 months ago, it returned in my right lung, and I have been on therapy ever since. And some ways, I guess being a medical oncologist has been easier for me because nothing that I'm going through is a surprise. In other words, whenever something happens or I have a new medicine or a side effect, I'm not surprised like a layperson. And so, you know, it's kind of like almost an outer body experience that it's happening to my patient, but my patient is me, okay? I think the more amazing journey, though, for me, and I can only wish this for everyone, is that you know, you never know how real your faith is. I mean, you sit there and you can say all the right things.
Go through the motions.
But do you really, really believe this?
Yeah.
Do you really believe you're going to heaven because you did this? We all have those thoughts. That's normal. But all of a sudden, when you realize that your illness is going to send you off to heaven or send you off to death, you have to really ask yourself, am I really going to heaven? And the most amazing thing for me and something that gave me great comfort is that right from the beginning, I've just accepted that. I don't look forward to the process of dying, but I'm not fearful of being dead. I feel sad for my family after I'm gone and how much they'll miss me and maybe even you.
I'm a guy you want to miss, right?
But the reality is that I won't be suffering. I'll be in heaven having the best time ever for eternity. And I've had no fear. I've had no anger at God. I haven't one time said, God, why me? My theology and belief has been strong enough that it's just been okay. And all I can pray and I ask God for the strength that all this will continue and I'll finish well, and at no point break down and start being angry or questioning or any of those things, which I don't really think is going to happen. It's an amazing piece I have that I don't know how somebody can go through this without faith and a belief that they're guaranteed eternity in heaven. I just don't know how they can do it.
They don't. That's the problem. They don't. I'm going to talk about me for a second here. My favorite topic. In 2014, I believe it was. I'm terrible. You're really good on dates and times and all that kind of stuff. I'm not. My brain didn't work that way, which is probably part of my problem, right? 2014, I had a widowmaker, they called it. I think that's probably a general term for people that had a heart attack and they want to give them a moniker. I didn't take it very seriously, to be honest with you, when I had it, because I knew I had a bad problem. You know, it just happened like bam, it just came on me. And but I never felt that I was going to die from it. Why? I have no idea. I just, and maybe that's what got me through it, kinda. But a few years later, I had a what they call open heart surgery. Now you've been there.
Yep, had you, that too.
Been there, done that. Wrote the book, right? You know. And I had C.D. Williams. In fact, I think you actually were one of the people that might have referred me to CD possibly back then, or you'd heard him and said he's one of the best. And if it wasn't you, it was somebody you knew for sure. And I had two or three doctors say that actually to me. And I had open heart surgery. I got a little bit nervous about that because, quite honestly, I didn't want to have a little scar there or big scar, depending on how it was. And went through that process. He worked for the Heart Hospital at the time over in Little Rock and operated on me, and everything went pretty well. Didn't really have any problems. And then I want to tell you what a guy this guy is sitting over here. I consider him my unofficial real doctor because I'm close to him. I can ask him questions that I wouldn't ask somebody else possibly. And he is the guy that says, well, Tom, here's your deal. You're taking this medication and it's causing this problem that you're having. Don't take that medication. And I go, what the heck are you talking about? Don't take that. I've been prescribed this. If anybody out there has seen more than one doctor about a problem and you got too many doctors in the pie, so to speak, guess what? There's a possibility, folks, that maybe they don't look at all your prescriptions the way they used to or need to. It's just possible. I'm not saying it happens, but it happened to me. And this guy here said, you probably need to talk to your doctor and stop taking this. Well, guess what? I called the other doctor because that's what I needed to do and say, I didn't say Dr. Jack said, but I said, I have this dear friend that suggested that this might be causing a problem. Well, sure. It was Dr. Jack that gave me that, and I wasn't supposed to be. And I was having side effects from different things. Well, I didn't need to be taken. Go ahead.
You're actually not telling this.
Well, I don't want to tell
it. You went to
the
emergency room twice.
Yeah, yeah,
whatever.
They
didn't do anything for you. You then tried to call your different doctors, and none of them answered the phone that weekend. And that's when I saw you, and you were practically gone. And at that point, I did a number of things. I didn't like doing it without your doctor's permission, but you couldn't get a hold of them.
Of course.
And later, after you survived and you told them what we did, then they all apologized to you.
Maybe I'm a bad patient. Okay. Maybe just kind of go ahead and say it. But one, I'll tell you, I do want to tell one story on you. I went to a care clinic because I couldn't get in to see a doctor. And you've got a speech on that kind of stuff, don't you, coming up? But I went to care. I got this real nice nurse practitioner that saw me, and she took an x-ray of my lungs. I was having trouble breathing. I mean, like bad trouble breathing, like I didn't know if I was going to take another breath type breathing. And she said, Tom, I believe you have what they call fluid on the lungs. And she said, you need to go to the emergency room. And I think that at that time, right after I got out, I might have called you and said something. And so I'm heading to the emergency room after I called my wife, of course, and I'm sitting there in the car. So I get to the emergency room. I'm sitting in there like most people do. That particular day, there wasn't really anybody in the emergency waiting room by itself, which was very unusual. And so they haul me back into behind the curtains, as I call it. And I'm back there. And other than the fact that I couldn't breathe, I was in pretty good condition. So I go in there and I'm not there about a minute and a half. And I turned and I looked and here's this guy sitting over there. I didn't have my glasses on, but I started squinting and I go, my God, it's Dr. Jack sitting there at my feet. I must have made it to heaven, you know? And so he starts laughing like that ridiculous laugh of his. And he starts laughing and he says, well, I've already talked to your doctor and blah, blah, blah. You remember that at all? And filled him in. So when he comes down here, he's going to know, you know.
Well, you didn't have a doctor. I called up someone that I liked and said, please get over here.
Well, maybe that was what happened.
Yeah.
I was kind of out of it. So I'm in the hospital for like 3 or 4 days and they finally determine that I am going to they're going to look at me and under the x-ray machine, whatever it's called, and see if fluid on the lung is my problem. They checked a few other things first. And as I'm still having trouble breathing, I remember being rolled back to the room. I had been prepped the whole nine yards. And there's this really nice guy that came in and he was in charge of the machine and everything. And he and I started talking and he said, yeah, I used to work for a doctor and I know a little bit about this kind of stuff. And he said, the x-ray really doesn't show, Tom, that you might have a little fluid, but that fluid kind of hides in some of the cavities outside the lung. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if he's giving me a story. But anyway, so I go in there. They go through the process. I remember coming, I wasn't totally out of it, but they kind of put a little needle under my arm, and that's where they went in. That's what he told me anyway. And so I said, well, did I have fluid on the lung? He said, yeah, you had 1.7, is it liters? 1.7 liters of fluid we drained off you. And I said, of course, I was half out of it. I said, well, is that very much? And he said, Tom, take a deep breath. And I took a deep breath and I could breathe like immediately. I couldn't breathe when I went in there. I could breathe. And Jack, is that common?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Actually, you're not even telling the story.
Right? I never tell a story.
You were in the emergency room.
Mine's
I looked
more
at the x-ray. I said, Tom, you have close to 2 liters of fluid in your lung. And
he made
we had
up.
It taken off immediately that day. And that's when you started feeling.
Yeah, you made that up. It was just amazing. So, folks, if you can't breathe out there, try that. And I have never smoked a cigarette in my life. Well, I did with Bobby Berg once. It was in a camp. But I took one puff, and it was all over. It wasn't for me. So, just an amazing story. And then... Jack, we should let it be known because there's a lot of autograph seekers at Planet Fitness where we've attended numerous times together. And Jack has a tendency to wear me out. The other operation, I had gastric sleeve, bariatric surgery. And my doctor at that time at the Heart Hospital, nice guy and knowledgeable. He said, you want to live another 10 years? And I said, starting when? He said, I'm serious. And so we went through this whole deal with a psychologist. That's where we should start first instead of the last one. But the psychologist said, well, okay, I guess you pass. I don't know what all that meant. but you go through six or seven different deals before they will say, mentally, are you ready to lose weight? And I lost to date 88 pounds. It's been a lot. Significant. Go lift 88 pounds. You'll know how much I've lost. And I never knew I would, because I was a college football player, high school college football player, and always after I stopped doing that, I played professional racquetball. After I stopped doing that, I ate the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, we've gone out to eat lots of time. I ate everything. I'd eat everything was left on your plate, the whole nine yards. That's just what I did. And that certainly added to not having being real healthy. And I think that's the whole story I'm trying to get to there. And tell me, you've been through lots of stuff. You've been through the heart issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me, Jack. Tell me a little bit about that.
I had quadruple bypass, followed by septic shock. I then had the kidney removed. I've had cardiac ablations. Modern medicine has kept me alive innumerable times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What is septic shock? What's that?
Septic shock is when bacteria get in your bloodstream and your blood pressure drops dangerously low.
Wow.
And to this day, they don't know why it happened to me. But fortunately, I survived that episode. But, yeah.
I think you and I are both walking miracles in many ways.
Absolutely. I mean, and, you know, you and I both have had magnificent lives.
Absolutely.
We have done so much in our lives that we're proud of, and I have few regrets in my life, and I'm just feeling very blessed, even though I'm presently on the therapy for the cancer. I feel good, and until I don't, I'm going to live as normal a life as I can.
Now, you're on a board, too. Tell us about the board that you're on.
Since 1993, I am on the board of a evangelical organization called Jews for Jesus. It's a organization that our primary goal is to share with our fellow Jewish people that Jesus Christ is our long-awaited Jewish Messiah. And so I've been on that board now over 30 years, and it's been just an amazing experience. On the board are theologians, pastors, lawyers, dentists. I mean, just different people who are theologically strong, and I've learned so much from them, and it just, you know, it's one of those things in your life that you never could have anticipated, that you believe that you've done another good thing for people in the world.
Wow. Well, is there anything else before we wrap it up here that you want to share with the audience?
You know, I thought about this the other day, that I'm giving this talk in a few days,
right?
About why is there a doctor shortage and a healthcare shortage, and I go through what it was like in my day to be a doctor versus it's like today, and one of the things that struck me throughout all of my medicine career was that the scripture says, don't think more highly of yourself than you ought, and I was blessed to be able to take care of people and help people, not because I'm special, but God gifted me that way. And I never thought of myself as being this big super doctor, number one, that never really came across my mind. I mean, to me, I was still little Jackie Sternberg from Brooklyn, Queens. I mean, and I guess that's also a blessing also, is that I never really thought of myself more highly than I ought. Well, and I think that pleases God.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I thought about earlier, and I kind of forgot about it, because that's what happens when you get a little older.
Frequently.
Did you play any sports when you were growing up at all?
No.
What were your interests besides girls? You just always wanted to be a doctor or what?
You know, I guess I just studied and studied. And now I didn't always want to be a doctor. I anticipated being a dentist.
Really?
Yeah. And my parents wildly thought maybe I could become a dentist. I mean, they never even thought of doctor. And they kind of pushed me towards that. And actually, after my third year of college, I took the exam, I carved the chalk, and I got accepted at dental school. And I wasn't going to have to even graduate college.
You're
I was
kidding.
Accepted after 3 years. And it was right at that point that I made it into dental school so easily that I thought, well, gee, maybe I could make it into medical school. I mean, that never even crossed my mind before then. And so I actually went and worked as an orderly at a hospital, picking up bedpans and other things.
Oh, really?
And I fell in love.
From the bottom up, right?
Yeah. I fell in love with being a doctor, with medicine.
Yeah.
I moved up to being a phlebotomist, an IV starter. I rode on the ambulances. I mean, I got all this experience before I even graduated college. And I absolutely fell in love with medicine and then rejected dentistry and applied to medical school.
Wow. Well, Jack, I definitely want to have you back again. There's so many stories that you have that are so incredible, and they're locked up in that brain of yours, and I want to try to get them out on the microphone. But I appreciate you being here today. This has been fun. I've actually enjoyed being with you for a change.
You know, we've done this a few times.
Yeah.
And it's always fun to do it because, you know, there's no script.
No.
And you're just...
Off
and you
the
ask
cuff.
Questions and yeah. answering spontaneously, and you don't kind of know what's going to come out of your mouth sometimes.
All the time. I mean, but that's the nature of me. My mother was like that. You never knew exactly what she was going to say or what she was thinking, and it was always correcting me. No, I'm just kidding. She was a wonderful person. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you have learned something today. I hope that you enjoyed the journey that I have with my friend here, Dr. Jack Sternberg. And I'd like for you, if you have a question, write us about it or send it to my email. That's banjo strings, like playing a banjo, strings like strings on a guitar, banjostrings@gmail.com. And send a question. If you got a question for the doctor, I have a feeling that we can get him back in here and talk about some things that maybe you have a question about. But for now, we're going to leave you here. Thank you for being here at Sweet Pea Productions is our company here that we have a marketing agency. If you need marketing, please give us a ring. Not a ring, but email me at that email that I just gave you. Dr. Jack, thank you for being here. It's been a really neat moment for me personally.
I've enjoyed it so much, my friend.
You bet. Thank you all.